It is just a huge honor for me today to be podcast interviewing Mark Johnson, who is the founder of StudentLoansRx.com and a wealth advisor with RBF Wealth Advisors in St. Louis, Missouri, home of Dr. Stephen Matthews. That's how I know that town. Mark has been in the financial services industry since 1991. He's a registered investment advisor and is insurance licensed in several states. Several years ago, Mark discovered that the financial advisory industry had pretty much ignored one of the largest financial planning issues of our day, student loan repayment. Mark and his team were early pioneers in developing strategies to help emerging healthcare professionals create smart, cost-effective financial plans to tackle their student loan debt in the context of their career aspirations, family situation, and personal financial goals. Mark speaks to hundreds of dental professionals each year by visiting dental schools, residency programs, dental conferences, interviews through social media platforms like today. Mark and his wife, Lisa, a nurse, have five children in Chesterfield, Missouri. And so I just want to start off with, why is it that everybody that speaks about financial advising, they talk about everything but financial advising, which is never get married, you'll never pay for divorce, never have any children, you'll never have any college bills. If you would just not get married and not have any children, we wouldn't even have to be talking about this today. And how could you be a financial advisor when you're married with five children?
Well, that's a great question, Howard. Kind of an interesting introduction. If we didn't procreate, there'd be nobody to take care of us in our old age, I guess is the short answer.
All right.
I'm hoping that one of our five children will be willing to take me to the doctor's appointment in future years.
Well, I have four boys, so I'm sure that's not going to happen. Were any of your five children girls?
Yes, we have three girls.
Well, then you'll get to go to your doctor's appointment. Maybe if you'll have extra time and extra girls, they can swing by my house and take me to mine. So obviously student loans has massively changed in your lifetime. I mean, did you ever see this balloon getting this big back when you got into finances in 1991? Did you ever think 2019 it'd look like this?
Well, I never had any idea. I got my school paid for through the generals in the Air Force, and never even thought anything about student loans, and didn't think about it honestly for the first 20 years of my career, Howard. I got the opportunity to do a lunch and learn here in St. Louis at the orthodontic residency program at St. Louis University, and I went in and did a presentation on budgeting, investments, and insurance. And I didn't mention the word student loan one time in the presentation. This was 5 years ago. And a few of them wanted to sit down with me and talk to me about investing. And when they told me that they were somewhere between $400,000 and $750,000 in student loan debt, I was blown away. I had no idea. So this came kind of late to me personally, but it also is very, very late for my industry. If you think of the number of financial advisors there are in the country, and I think it's roughly 300,000 or so. Most of them do retirement planning, but I bet you I can count on two or three sets of hands how many financial advisors actually do student loan repayment planning. So it's a fairly new subspecialty, and my team and I were one of the first groups, I think, that really got into this specifically in the dental space over the last few years.
You know, if you go on Dentaltown and you just do a type in, dental student loans, I mean, it's just a gazillion conversations coming up because back to, you know, Howard's rule of financial planning is just don't get married and don't have any children and with nothing to talk about, but that's not what we do. Not only do they go to dental school, they marry someone in their dental school class. So I know families that are $1 million in debt because both of them are dentists. And then if I become a dentist, but my wife goes on to ortho school, now she's got three more years of college. And I see married couples $1 million in student loans. So what can you possibly do to do that? I mean, do you recommend that they just leave and go to Sydney, Australia, or are you thinking more Rio de Janeiro, or where should they defect to?
I think we have agreements to bring people back from Australia that skip the country. There's a short list of countries where we don't have repatriation agreements, and I don't think people want to be going there. It's creating a financial plan. We've got a number of strategies that we help clients tackle their student loan debt. But the key that we think is really important is to do it in the overall context of a comprehensive financial plan based on your career aspirations. We've identified a few different tracks. You know, when somebody graduates dental school, they really go down one of four tracks. They either go to residency, they become an associate at a DSO, they go into public health, or they potentially buy a practice. Now, I don't know what the numbers are, but it's certainly less than 5% buy a practice right out of dental school. So given one of those four tracks requires some unique planning. And that's what we do, is we help them build a plan around their career aspirations.
So what are the four, only 5% buy, go straight into a practice or buy?
Well, I said less than 5%. I'm guessing at that number. I would think it's fairly accurate.
Okay. So dental graduates, 5%, walk out and purchase an office
or start? I would say less than that. It's somewhere, I wouldn't think it's more than that. I think it's probably less than that. I don't know exactly the exact number. I'm sure the ADA has some numbers on that. But
and then what were the other ones you said?
Then you go on to residency.
Okay, you said residency.
Residency would be a track. Buying your own practice is a track. Becoming an associate at either a DSO or a private practice. And then the final track is public health. So each of those four tracks requires some unique planning.
Real okay.
So for example, if somebody wants to go into public health, I mean, we're out here in the Midwest. I've got a number of clients that go to schools out here, dental schools in the Midwest, and they want to go back maybe to their hometown, and maybe they start out in a small rural community and they want to work at the public health clinic in town. You know, obviously, if they sign up for public service loan forgiveness, they're going to get their student loans, you know, forgiven after 10 years of payments. And so that particular planning track requires certain nuances. We know that they have to recertify their income on an annual basis. They have to make sure that their employer stays qualified for public service loan forgiveness. So those are some unique planning scenarios that we have to take into account for those individuals. If somebody tells me their goal is to buy a practice in 3 to 5 years out of school, then that's another set of planning objectives that we have to make sure we're covering.
So when they come out of school, I've read the that they have about on average $284,000 student loans, and they're either going to go do a residency, 5%, less than 5% buy a practice. They're going to go buy and be an associate at DSO or private or public health. So you're saying there's a lot of programs that if you're a public health dentist, they have student loan deferment programs or.
Well, the largest one is called Public Service Loan Forgiveness. Okay. PSLF, Public Service Loan Forgiveness, is a 10-year plan. So if you go to work at a qualified public health clinic, maybe it's in an urban community or in a rural community, even Native American reservations, any of those types of clinics, if you stay in that employment for 10 years, you essentially make an interest-only payment. It's a little bit more than that, but you make a payment over 10 years. And at the end of that 10 years, whatever's left is forgiven on a tax-free basis. So that's one program that's very popular. There's also through the National Service Corps, National Health Service Corps, there's a number of scholarships. There's a scholarship called the Students to Service Scholarship, and that awards a dental school graduate with up to $120,000 of student loan forgiveness.
What's it called?
Students to Service.
Students to Service.
Yeah, and that's through the National Health Service Corps.
And you're seeing Dennis using this?
Sure, that's a great, that's $120,000 of scholarships. It's paid over usually three payments of $40,000 the first 3 years out of dental school. Now you have to apply for that, I think at the beginning of your senior year. And it's competitive. And then a number of the states also have forgiveness programs. So there's a number of programs, and those forgiveness programs, again, National Health Service Corps, Student to Service, the state programs, those are all for students that are going to be going into public health.
Okay. And now, in your experience, you've been doing this forever. What percent, how common is it for them to go into public health because of their student loans? You say less than 5% by their own practice.
The folks that come to us that we work with, I'd say one out of four.
So 25%.
Probably, again, I don't know that this is a national average, Howard. I just know that probably one out of four, maybe one out of five of our clients go into public health. We work in some of the private dental schools. And, I think that 284 thousand average that you quoted, that might be for public schools. We see a lot of clients that are coming out of the private dental schools with anywhere from $400,000 to $500,000 in student loan debt.
Yeah. And so the stat I was going by was the one from the American Dental Education Association says the average debt per graduating dental student dental school senior in 2017 was $287,331. The average cost. But the reason that's a bad number is because, not a bad number, but the details, everything. If your dads and mom are paying for your dental school class, you're part of the average. So there's one number to say of those who have student loans, what is the number? But when you just take the graduating class divided by the debt, it doesn't compensate for how many people had their dental school paid for.
Sure. So we've got two dental schools here in St. Louis. One's a private, one's across the river in Illinois. The one in Illinois is a state school. And I see most of the graduates from the state school that are graduating with $100,000 to $150,000 less versus the private school. So that's kind of what we see in our work. But we work with clients graduating dental school or residency program all over the country, and it's obviously the schools on the East Coast and West Coast are a little more expensive than state schools in the Midwest. But
so you have two dental schools. Okay, one is the ATSU Missouri School of Dentistry and Oral Health. Is that the one in St. Louis you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
And then what's the other one?
Southern Illinois University, and that their dental school is in Alton, Illinois.
Yeah. Southern Illinois School of Dentistry in Illinois. And so you're saying that the Southern Illinois dental school students have so much less than the ATSU?
On average, and again, I don't get to visit with all of the students, but just in the ones that we visited with and worked with, on average, I would say they come out of school maybe $100,000 to $150,000 less.
And that's if they go to Southern Illinois, right? If they go to Southern Illinois,
that would be the case when you talk to any of graduates that are going to private schools or schools on each of the coasts. Those are more expensive than a state school in the Midwest.
And do you think those private schools are going to start drifting their tuition down, or do you see any or do you see any of that, or is the price just still so inelastic that raising the price has no elastic effect on demand, so they won't do it? I mean, how are you seeing?
No, I'm getting out of my area of expertise now. I mean, I'm not in the higher education industry. I'm in the wealth planning industry. But as long as there's virtually an unlimited amount of student loan debt, or student loans available, whether it's dental school, private schools, I think the cost of education is going to continue to go up. That's just economics 101. If you provide an unlimited amount of money in any endeavor, you're going to get more of it. That's just, the price is going to go up. You know, I'm going to charge as much as I can. You're going to charge as much as you can. If there's an unlimited amount of money chasing a limited supply of goods, that's just going to drive the price up. That's just the way it works.
So who are your clients? I mean, I love your website. That's why I asked you to be on the show. It's studentloansrx.com. Studentloansrx.com. I love the website. So to differentiate your student loans, you put RX, knowing that you want to focus on doctors who write prescriptions.
Yeah. So we focus primarily on healthcare professionals, and probably 80% of the folks we work with are coming out of dental school or residency, dental residency programs all over the country. And, you know, we like working with dental professionals because, like us, they're entrepreneurial. You know, I run my own business, and a lot of dentists want to eventually own their own practices, and they're great wealth management clients because they're entrepreneurial. And there's a number of things that we can do to help them, not only with their personal finances, but with their business finances as well, as they mature and grow into their careers. And we identified that the wealth management industry had pretty much ignored student loan planning. There's a lot of people out there that graduate from school. They're looking for some assistance. How do I pay back? You mentioned these couples that have $1 million of student loan debt between them, you know, and they're in their early 30s, let's say, graduating residency, or late 20s, getting out of dental school. You know, they're entering their working careers with $500,000 plus in individual student loan debt. And frankly, we didn't think that there was a whole lot of good advice being given out there. And based on the dental schools that we visit, we still see that. I'm going to a new dental school next week, or actually this week, Friday. I'm speaking at a new dental school that we've never been in before. And it's just the hunger for students to learn, how do I repay this student loan debt in the most cost-effective manner? And is there any way to save some money on interest? And that's really kind of our secret sauce, if you will, is to really help them identify a repayment plan that's not charging them 6.5%. Because the average dental student today, Howard, is graduating with about 6.5% interest rate on their loans. So if somebody's got $400,000 in student loan debt, just at 6%, that's $2,000 a month just in interest.
Go ahead. Keep going.
Well, I was just going to say, let's say a dentist graduates from dental school this past May or June, and their first year, they're probably signing a contract to make somewhere between $125,000 and $150,000. $1,000. That's I think a good ballpark.
As an associate.
As an associate, sure. And so, you know, they're relocating to a new city probably most of the time when they're graduating dental school. They're setting up a new residence, getting plugged into their career, $400,000 student loan debt, and if you were to amortize that over 10 years, you're looking at a $5,000 a month payment. So most students aren't willing to bite that off right out of dental school. And so we help them identify the appropriate repayment strategy, which oftentimes leads us to helping them get plugged in or enrolled in what's called an income-driven repayment plan through the Department of Education. And there's a, go ahead.
Income-driven repayment plan from the DOE?
Yes.
Okay.
So the students get their loans through, well, the financial aid office at the school helps facilitate the loans, and they pick a loan servicer at the time that they take out the loans. And once they get ready to graduate, enter their careers, or go on to residency, that's when they have the opportunity to start repaying their student loans. An income-driven repayment plan caps your monthly payment at 10% of your discretionary income.
Okay.
So let's say you sign a contract and you're going to be making $120,000 as a first year dentist. You would expect that your monthly payment on that is going to be something just less of $1,000 a month. So 10% of your discretionary income. Now, on a loan balance of $400,000, if it's accruing interest at 6%, your interest is accruing at $2,000 a month. So your payment of $1,000 doesn't even cover the interest. And so one of the strategies that we've identified that can be really helpful to especially dentists and residents coming out in that first year or two out of school is that there are four different types of income-driven repayment plans. I won't go into all of them right now, but the repayment method that we find that works really well for dental professionals is called the revised pay-as-you-earn. Revised pay-as-you-earn. The acronym is REPAY, R-E-P-A-Y-E. And that income-driven repayment plan provides up to a 50% subsidy on their interest rate. So
nice.
Now, the folks that are traditionally supposed to be helping graduates figure out their repayment schedule, there's a slight conflict of interest in my view, and they don't really promote this revised pay-as-you-earn. And so we find a lot of dental professionals that have graduated, they might be out of school for a year or two, and when they first called their loan servicer to get put on an income-driven repayment plan or to explore their options of repayment, repay wasn't the first option that was presented to them. And I just wrote an article saying that repay, revised pay-as-you-earn, should be the first option graduates look at when they're considering repayment. And it's all wrapped around this 50% interest subsidy. So the way it works, Howard, so let me ask you a question. How much does a dental student make their last year in school?
None.
Zero. So they graduate, let's say they start graduating the 15th of May through the end of June. Probably 90% of dental schools graduate the 15th of May through the end of June. And so then they take a few weeks off, well-deserved vacation, and they start working. Most of our clients start working the 15th of June through the end of July. So there's about a 6 to 8 week period of time where they've graduated from dental school and they have no income. And that is really the sweet spot. So that's our busiest time of the year. That 6 to 8 week period of time, we're helping our clients where an income-driven repayment plan is appropriate. If they've got significant student loan debt, we're getting them enrolled in an income-driven repayment plan, the repay option, while they have no income. In that first year, they qualify for up to a 50% subsidy as long as we can get them on the plan before they start earning an income.
So Most dental students graduate between, what'd you say, between May 15th and June?
May 15th and the end of June.
To June 31. And so that's six 30th, weeks yeah. of no work. Huh, yeah. yeah. I graduated May of 1987, and my ex still hasn't worked. So it can go on a long time. Pretty.
There you go.
See, that's my student loan financial planning. So, but I hate to derail this interview, but on Dental Town today, you know what they're actually, you know what they're talking about on student loans? And I hear this all the time. There was an article published in the National Review, said an idea for student loans, get rid of them. And now we have an election coming up and all that crap. And there's literally a lot of dental students thinking, well, why should I try to start aggressively paying back my student loans? Because you know they're just going to erase them. The government's going to pay them off anyway. What would you, I mean, don't shoot the messenger. Don't get mad at me. I mean, this is what kids are saying out there. What would you say to that kid?
I would say good luck. That's what I would say. First of all, we're talking about $1.6 trillion of student loan debt. And do they really think that these presidential contenders are talking about healthcare professionals with the ability to earn $500,000 to $1 million of annual income? I don't think so. I think what they're talking about are people in what we might consider minority communities, however you want to define that term, that have gone on to receive a higher education and have not been able to land a good job and are being overwhelmed by student loans. Okay. I don't believe if you nailed any one of these presidential contenders and got them in a room and said, are you talking about people that are going to be making between $500,000 and potentially $1 million a year? Are those the people you're talking about for giving student loans? I don't think that that's who they're referring to. So I'm not an advocate. My goal for clients is to help them pay off student loans, put together a plan to pay off their student loans in 7 to 10 years after graduation, but that's consistent with their career aspirations. So this is my first time on your show, Howard. And so let's say you're a young dentist graduating and you've got 3 to 5 year goal of buying a practice. Okay. Now, I would never recommend in that situation, someone has $400,000 or $500,000 in student loan debt, I would never recommend that they start paying that off $4,000 or $5,000 a month. Okay. What we want to do is we want to put them in a position to get a loan in 3 to 5 years, perhaps from Bank of America, right? Now, what is Bank of America or any other lender going to look at in terms of financial footing to give this young dentist a loan to buy a practice? What are the ingredients that they're going to be looking at? Okay, are the criteria? Number one, they're going to want to know that this dental practice that this young dentist is looking to purchase, that the practice cash flows. That's going to be the number one thing the banker is going to be looking at. Number two, they're going to want to look at the dentist's personal finance and what their monthly payments are. So if they've adopted, let's say they've pulled their loans out of the federal program and they've done a private refinance, there's several companies, there's about 10 or 12 big companies that just hammer dental students and dental resident graduates on refinancing with a private lender. They're getting emails all the time. So let's say they pull their $400,000 or $500,000 out of the federal program and they set up a 15-year plan and their payment's $3,500 to, let's say, $4,500 a month. Would the banker rather give a loan to someone that has a $1,500 a month student loan payment or someone that has a $3,500 to $4,500 a month student loan payment? What do you think?
Yeah, cash flow is king. They want small payments.
Okay. So if somebody's got a goal, to buy a practice in 3 to 5 years out of school, we generally recommend they get on an income-driven repayment plan. We keep their payment low. In the first couple of years, they're going to qualify, in many cases, for some level of interest subsidy. So they're really not accruing interest at 6.5%. If they get on the plan right out of school when they have no income, we essentially can cut their interest rate in half that first year out of school. Now, even if their interest rate was 6.5%, if we can get a subsidy, let's say a 50%, their loans are still accruing interest at 3.25%, and on $500,000, that's real money. So what we encourage them to do is to set aside a savings account to where they're saving that interest that's accruing over the next 12 months. And then maybe once a year, if we can get access to capital at 3.25% in those first couple of years, while this dentist is getting situated in their profession and they're saving some money towards maybe the down payment on a practice, that's going to be a lot better situation for the bank to consider than somebody that says, well, I haven't been able to save any money in 3 years, but I did pay down $150,000 in my student loan. The bank could care less about that.
Right. And I think the kids don't understand. They might not understand the rule of 72. I always thought that was so great. The rule of 72, when he's talking about this interest rate is 6% and this one is, cut the interest rate in half. The rule of 72 says that to find the number of years required to double your money at a given interest rate, you just divide the interest rate into 72. For example, if you want to know how long it will take to double your money at 8%, divide 8 into 72 and get 9 years. So I mean, Albert Einstein said compound interest was the greatest force in the universe. How many of these kids do you think understand compound interest and the cost of that money, how much it fluctuates on interest rate? Now, I can tell you examples that I see in my own backyard. They'll be looking at two houses to buy. And they're looking at two different houses to buy, and they're all fixated on the price, and they don't even know what the interest rate on the loan's going to be.
Right. Well, obviously, I'm not aware of any dental school or residency program that requires a finance class to be taken to graduate. So I have not we visit many schools and residency programs each year, and I don't know of any that require a personal finance class. So I think the answer to your question, Howard, is there's not that many people graduating from dental school or any other higher education school, unless they're a finance major, that's required to take these. I guess in one way that gives me,
job security.
It gives me job security. But what we try to teach them is basic financial planning principles. You want to start saving as early as possible towards retirement and other goals. You want to really take advantage of any opportunities in that first couple of years out of school to get some interest subsidy. And that revised pay-as-you-earn plan is a really good first place to look. And you want to do this in the context of an overall financial plan. And you're going to have insurance, that disability insurance, and you're going to need some life insurance, and you're going to want to start funding your Roth IRAs in the first year or two out of school. Once their income gets above $90,000 as a single person or $190,000 as a married couple, they're no longer able to fund a Roth IRA directly. You can always do a backdoor Roth IRA in the first few years, but we want to get them putting money. Another statistic I read from the ADA is that only 4% of dentists retire. Only 4% of dentists retire and are able to maintain the same lifestyle as they had when they were practicing. Now, why is that?
Divorce and children, but continue.
Divorce, children, not understanding how money works, thinking that, investing in things that maybe sound like a great investment, but haven't made any money yet. An example I use is 20 years ago, satellite radio, Sirius satellite and XM satellite radio. Do you remember that, Howard?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that was going to be a fantastic investment opportunity. I thought it was going to be a great opportunity. And both of those stocks went through the roof initially. And as it turns out, the American consumer is more than willing to pay for on-demand, television. And so we had HBO and DirecTV and all of those competitors. But as it turned out, the American public doesn't want to pay for radio, not in their car. And now we've got these little things. You picked one up just a minute ago. Here's mine. Now it doesn't cost me anything to have on-demand through Pandora and other streaming music services. So, that was a great idea. It seemed that maybe it was going to be have some promise, but it ended up turning out to be a really, really poor investment. So that's where taking some personal finance classes or perhaps working with a professional that's got some experience can really help these younger professionals. And I don't refer to them as kids anymore because I've got children their age, and they tell me that referring to them as kids doesn't work very well anymore. So they're young adults, and they've got a great future ahead of them, but they need to understand some basic principles about finance, and that's what we try to help them to do.
My gosh, it's such a huge section on Dental Town. Somebody just posted this morning on under dental student loans. It's under personal finance. Dental Town has 50 categories. One is finance. And it says, what is the most efficient way to pay off my student loans? $515,000 at 6.5% interest rate while saving for retirement family. I am 28 years old, just graduated last week with no wife, kids, mortgage, investments, and parents cannot help out. It's just amazing. There's just so many kids out here, and I'm so proud of them because they're on the boards and they're being transparent with their problems. You know, he's saying the amount of money, the interest rate, his age, all that stuff like that. And that's the first rule of success, that your ego, that you're humble, that you can raise your hand and ask a question. And I just love it. I've been on Dental Town since 99, and the kids that get on there and say, what's advice on buying a new practice? Well, you didn't tell me anything. And then the kid with high self-esteem and humble will say, there's two practices I can buy, and here they both are. Here's their location. Here's their price. And I just love dentists so much because they get on there and they share. The student loans questions on Dental Town are intense. One of the questions they're always asking is where did I just write here? What about dentists who are a few years out of school, and is it when is it too late to consider their repayment strategy?
Well, I say that if you didn't have a professional, if you didn't have a professional review your strategy at the very beginning, it's not a bad idea to. We offer a free 30-minute consultation, so we can give them some ideas. We actually did a new plan. This was on a medical doctor recently, but she'd been out of school for 10 years and she's been on the wrong plan the entire time she's been out of school. So I know they're doing here's the thing, Howard, they're crunched for time. They're studying for boards. They might have a thesis to do. They're interviewing out of town. They're relocating and setting up a new residence oftentimes. And they've got 6 months to delay making a decision on their student loans. So everybody that graduates gets a 6-month grace period. And so, there's a lot of resources online out there, articles and what have you, but a lot of people, they call up their loan servicer. And I think they get a lot of bad advice and they get on a plan and they just don't know any better. So I would say, if they haven't had a professional who specializes in this area, review their plan, they can be out of school for several years and we probably can still help a number of them. But the sweet spot is obviously leaving dental school, entering your career or residency, especially in those first, 2 to 4 years. that's when we can really help out a lot, because their income is still fairly low, given where it can be in the future, and they still might qualify for some subsidies. And then if their goal is to buy a practice, you know, they can really do some good work in those first 3 to 5 years out of school to put them in the best position to buy a practice.
So, you know, a big thing when they graduate, they start getting all these emails and calls and social media targeted marketing to refinance all that government debt into a private sector. And then they're reading the newspaper where, you know, just the, just a couple of days ago, published on California to pay off $10.5 million in student debt, giving poor patients greater access to dentists. And then you had that one we talked about earlier. So when you see these things, maybe it's not, is that kind of a negative to refinance your student loans to a private center, that if there are any changes in some of these government programs, you'd miss that advantage?
Right. So I would say 80% of the time or better, doing a private refinance immediately upon graduation from dental school or residency is a bad idea.
80% of the time.
I'd probably say higher, but my experience in the folks that we deal with that are coming out of school with maybe $400,000 to $500,000, we just picked up a client, an endodontist from California, with a cool $1 million in student loan debt. To do a private refinance, they're going to extend that payment out is over 15 years. So that's a pretty aggressive repayment right out of school. I don't know what the national stats are in terms of the number of times an associate changes jobs within the first, say, 3 to 4 years of graduation, but I'll bet you it's, you know, one out of every, you know, five or six probably change jobs just in the first 12 months out of school. And so we typically don't recommend a private refinance until they are either A, settled in their career, they found a place they like, they're liked, and they're going to stay there for a while. Maybe their income is, you know, pushing 200,000, and then they can find an attractive interest rate. Now, I will tell you that the private lenders do offer interest rates lower than what most graduates are graduating today. If you've got someone graduating with $400,000 to $500,000 in student loan debt, they've got a good credit, pretty decent credit score. I mean, at this point in their life, you know, hopefully they haven't filed bankruptcy or run up a bunch of credit card debt. But let's say they just have student loans. They sign an employment agreement, maybe for $125,000 to $150,000. They're going to get approved from a private lender. And given today's rates, they'll probably get a loan maybe around 4.5%, let's say. Okay. So obviously that's pretty attractive given that their interest rate on their federal loans right now is north of 6%. But in the first couple of years out of school, they may qualify for this up to 50% interest subsidy on their federal loans. So in that first year or two out of school, it just really doesn't make sense given where interest rates are right now, especially if they qualify for an interest subsidy, to take all that money out of the federal program, move it to a private lender where they have no deferment options. So let's say a couple of years out of school, this dentist decides they're going to buy a practice, okay? And they need to come up with some money to do that. Maybe they want to do some improvements to the practice, maybe buy some new equipment, et cetera. If they've got a student loan payment that they're locked in at $4,000 a month, as opposed to $1,200 or $1,500 a month, that cash flow moving to a private lender, especially if you've got a sizable student loan debt, can really put a crimp on cash flow in those first couple of years.
And when they so refinancing then is, I mean, you're saying it's 80% of the time it's a bad idea.
Okay, so here's when it's a good idea. Okay. Because I don't want to, you know, 80% is a big number, but that's just been my experience in working with the folks that have come to us. Okay. So it's a good idea to refinance when you've got a good household income, a good household income, and you can stomach that payment, which is going to be amortized over 15 years. So if you can swallow a $3,500 to $5,000 a month payment, because you've got maybe two household incomes, maybe your income is north of $200,000 or so, okay, fine. International students that decide to stay in the U.S. and they're going to seek permanent residency here, so they may have some private loans that are through Discover, Sallie Mae, maybe they've got some international loans, and maybe their loans are accruing interest. I've seen it as high as 9%. So then that would make sense to do a private refinance. Some companies will only refinance up to $100,000, though, for an international student who's seeking to stay in the U.S. The third way that it might make sense to refinance and pull your loans out of the federal program is if your student loan debt is not very high. But you quoted a number earlier at the beginning of the program, Howard, where the average dental student is graduating with $287,000. Now, I see that the folks that come to us, it's usually north of that number. I think our average client is about $400,000 or so. So in that case, I'm working with somebody right now, and she's single. She signed a contract for $150,000. Her living expenses are pretty low. She lives in the Midwest, and she has $300,000 of student loan debt. And what we're looking to do is maybe refinancing maybe $100,000, $150,000 of that, and getting that locked in for a 15-year payment at maybe 4%. I think we can get 4% in that situation. And she's going to take advantage of the interest subsidy on the remaining balance and just create a little bit of some flexibility. She doesn't know exactly what she's going to do in the next 2 to 3 years, if she's going to buy a practice or stay. She's working right now for a DSO. She doesn't really know that yet. So we're creating a plan that provides a little bit more flexibility as opposed to just taking the entire amount of money out and then setting her up on a payment over 15 years on that $300,000 student loan debt. We may only do half of that now. So one of the things that I encourage people to do is when they're creating a plan, to kind of build in some flexibility in the plan, because nobody has a crystal ball. Now, I will go on record to say, that I don't believe any dental professional is going to have their student loans debt forgiven by an act of Congress in the next, few years. I mean, I just think that's foolish talking. If they want to get more votes, what they really should do is, for guys like us that still have a mortgage on our home, they should offer to forgive our home mortgages. They'd get a lot more votes that way than paying off student loan debt. I think it's foolish talk. I do think that there needs to be some changes to financing of higher education, but forgiving loans is going to be that's just foolishness, in my opinion.
You know, in the paper last month, Dental Student Loan Repayment Program signed into law by the Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, Law HB 843. The one theme that they all have in common is states are passing programs to help dentists if they're working in low-income Medicaid areas.
Exactly.
And it says there's only 5 states that don't have a program like that. So are you saying that that's a big thing that everyone should be focusing on?
Well, I think it's something that they should consider. So one of the services that we offer our clients is if they engage us before they graduate, we kind of help them think through that with respect to the different job offers that they're looking at. So I'll give you an example. We had a couple years ago, we have several examples like this, but just one off the top of my head. We had a young lady graduate from a Midwestern school, and she had about $400,000 in student loan debt. And she had an offer from a DSO for $130,000 starting pay. And she had an offer in a public health clinic for the same amount of money. And so her question was, I really don't know where I want to go yet with my career. I'd like to get my student loans paid off in 10 years. What are some options? Or what does each one of these options look like? And so in her situation, she was going to be making a payment starting out of around $900 a month towards her student loans on an income-driven repayment plan. If she went the public health route, at the end of 10 years with interest accumulation, they were going to repay about $400,000 was going to get forgiven tax-free, Howard. So over a 10-year period of time, one could argue that she was getting about $40,000 of income tax-free. So when we crunch the numbers, that starting job in a public health facility making $130,000 really was more like a $200,000 a year job for her starting out.
So I want to switch gears completely. I just want to leave the whole student loan program because I don't have much time with you left. One of the other, I'm on Dentaltown under finance, looking at all these student loan questions. And another one that just always comes up is, when do I start saving for retirement? I mean, obviously, if I come out of school with $300,000 in student loans, is that really the time to start a 401k, especially if I'm going to be trying to buy a dental office in 4 or 5 years? And you're a wealth advisor for RBF Advisors. And is that still, are you like 80% student loans with Student Loans RX and 20% wealth advisor with RBF? Or where is your time spent these days?
So I'm a wealth advisor who focuses on student loan planning and financial planning for emerging dental professionals. So 90% of my time is working with dental professionals who are recent graduates or will be graduating from either dental school or residency. So 5 years ago, I totally changed my business. 90% of my time is spent working with young emerging dental professionals, helping them create financial plans. To answer your question, we get them started saving something towards retirement immediately. So that's the thing. You have multiple financial planning objectives. You need to make sure you have adequate insurance. You need to make sure you're saving something towards retirement. You need to establish that discipline early in your career because, as you know, Howard, marriages and children start coming along. And if you haven't established that savings discipline, you're going to be one of those statistics that says that 4%, only 4% of dentists retire and are able to maintain their lifestyle. Yes, divorce has had an impact in that, but I would argue poor saving and investing disciplines was also a contributing factor. So we get our clients, or we encourage them, we help them build a financial plan that includes a budget, and they start saving towards retirement immediately. Most of our clients coming right out of school or residency are going to fund their Roth IRAs right away in that first year. We also, if they have, I just visited with a young man this morning who's practicing in Texas, and he just started his job. He becomes eligible for the 401k plan 60 days after employment, and they've got a matching contribution. Why would you leave any money on the table? If the company is willing to, in this particular case, it wasn't a significant match, but they would match up to 1%. So if he put in 4%, they would put in 1%. So 1% of pay on $150,000, okay, that's $1,500 pre-tax into a retirement account. Why would you leave that money on the table? So we believe in creating a balanced financial plan and setting financial planning goals in all of those areas, retirement planning, insurance planning, buying your first practice, and paying off student loan debt. They can do all of those things if they're smart about it. Now, do we encourage them to go out and buy a brand new Jaguar as soon as they graduate? No, we do not. Do we encourage them to buy a home right out of school? It depends. It depends on their situation. Obviously, the banks are more than willing to give a starting dentist, 100% loan to go buy a house, which is kind of crazy in my mind. But there's a lot of banks out there that will do that because they know their income, their earning potential over the years is going to be pretty good. So we just believe in comprehensive financial planning. And obviously, the student loan planning piece is a big chunk of their financial plan starting out. But there's more pieces to the financial puzzle, and we want to help them put those all together into a sensible plan.
I want to ask you on your own personal experience. A lot of people say that physicians, dentists, and lawyers are notoriously live above their means. Fair rap or bad rap?
I think it's a fair rap.
And since they live in this bubble and humans, I think the number one skill of all humans is that they can just rationalize anything. Can you talk to that little fella in a bubble and explain to him how you see him living above his means?
Well, sure. And I don't want to just talk about doctors because obviously there's lots of people that fall into this category. But I think that the idea is that they understand that they've got this huge earning potential over their lifetime. But I think what they don't recognize, and you talked about it early on, 50% of marriages end in divorce today. And so you don't plan for that. But what happens is we live in a very materialistic culture. You know, you can get brand new cars, brand new homes, almost no money down. And so what happens is people go to these lending institutions, and I think that they feel, well, if the banker didn't think I was good for the money, they wouldn't give me the loan. Okay. And so in what happens is they kind of feel that their materialistic desires are being endorsed by the lenders. And so we know that's a huge problem in our country with credit card debt and obviously all kinds of debt, automobiles and, starting out, if you take a look at the size of a home today in terms of square footage for a young couple getting married, it's twice as big as what the square footage on homes were just 25 years ago on a new couple. So that's just the culture we live in. And so, we just try to advise people, you can have everything you need and most of what you want with good planning, but it's going to take some time to get there. And these young folks that have been in school, so if they think about their high school buddies they graduated with that maybe didn't go on and get a graduate degree, didn't go on to dental school, didn't go on to residency. They've been in the workforce maybe for 4 to 8 years before, and they have a house, and they might have a fishing boat, and they might have. So I think there's a little bit of a pent-up demand for those coming out of medical and dental school, kind of some pent-up consumer demand, and they can feel the urge to kind of catch up a little bit to maybe some of their high school contemporaries. And my counsel to them always is, you know what? Give it 3 to 5 years, make some good, wise financial decisions now, and you're gonna be so much farther ahead than the young professional that feels they have to be driving the fancy new car and spending all of this money. You can drive a great car, but you don't have to do it all on credit. So that's my counsel to them.
And when you go out on a date and they don't even, when the bill comes, they don't even pretend to pay for it. Dude, that's the trade. You're a physician, you're a dentist, you're a lawyer, and you're with this amazing person, and that's the trade that preys on dentists, physicians, and lawyers. Like, they're a beauty queen, and you're going to pay through the nose for it, and that has nothing to do with love, relationships, whatever. So when you're with someone and they want to spend money, but they want to spend your money, I mean, how many red flags do you need? And then in my group in Phoenix, I mean, I can't tell you over 30 years how many times that everybody tried to tell some idiot, dude, look, you're just going to be taken to the cleaners. She just wants to not work and live high on the hog. And dentists, everyone sees it, but a dentist, a physician, or a lawyer. So live below your means, and ask yourself this. This is what I asked the dentist. I said, name me one category you live below your means. I mean, it's time to vacation. Normal people just go to the lake and camp out. You flew all the way to Disney World. Christmas, every Christmas you fly your whole family back home. I mean, your clothes, your watches, your cars, your house. I mean, just name one area. Instead of having two kids, I had four, you had five. I mean, instead of sending the kids to the local public state school, they sent them to private school. I'm like, Doc, can you name one single area where you live below your means? And they can't. And that's a disease. Live below your means. And, but seriously, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Mark. This is amazing. I wish you, on Dental Town, if you went under finance and went to the student loans, you could be answering these questions all day long. And where you post them, in fact, why don't you answer a question? And then what I'll do is where you answered that question is where I'll post this video on Dental Town so they can see you. They can see your words, but then they can see how you think.
Well, we'd appreciate any emerging dental professionals that need some help with student loan planning, or they've got any questions, Howard. They just need to go to our website, studentloansrx.com. They click up on the top right hand corner of our website. It says Get Started. They click on that. They fill out, it takes 2 minutes on average to fill out our needs assessment. Just get a little bit of information, and one of either myself or one of my team members will give them a 30-minute free consultation.
That is a beautiful thing. I'm on your website now.
So if you go up to the top right-hand corner, you can see Get Started.
Right.
The Get Started button. They just click on that. It takes them to our needs assessment. We actually measure the time. It takes on average about 2 minutes to fill out that. They click the submit button, and one of our team members will reach out to them to do a free 30-minute consultation. No obligation. We're here to help people. We know this is a really, really important topic. I think it's the number one financial topic that young dentists and residents are concerned about with respect to finance. They know how much money they're going to make. They know the upside. That's why they went to dental school. But getting their head around the optimal way to repay student loan debt is really, really important. There's a lot of mistakes that get made, and we're just here to help.
All right. And again, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed having you come on the show today. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Howard. Have a great day.
All right. You too, buddy.